Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm here today because Scary Movie Month is coming just a little bit early.
Woo!
We get to talk about Insidious Chapter 2, and joining me in the conversation is everyone's favorite creepy puppet, Adam Risky.
Nice. Creep. Oh, yeah, that's his Twitter handle.
Yes, of course.
Mr. James
Wine. You gotta stick for the deep cuts. All right, repeat after me. My name is Marilyn.
No! I know where that's going, and I like my balls, and I don't want to cut them off.
You can and should find our website at fthismovie.net. You should follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie. You can find us through DVD Verdict by going to dvdverdictpresents.com. Thank you to everybody at DVD Verdict for including us in their podcast family. Different podcasts every day. dvdverdictpresents.com. And you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Patrick.
Yo.
Do you think that the Lambert's home smells really bad?
Why?
Because of all the astral projection.
Boom. Boom.
Been sitting on working that one for 3 days.
Working on your Insidious themed stand-up act.
Yeah, I'm going to be one of the clean guys of comedy on nice. The Fathom Events. Clean guys of comedy, which is bullshit because, yeah, they're clean, but they're also... BS because, yeah, they're clean, but they're also, like, really mean.
Yeah.
So it's just like, we're clean, but we're also completely rude and horrible.
Possibly racist. Yeah. I think you should do a stand-up act that's entirely Insidious themed.
I think I could do that. I would have to be at, like, a horror con, but I would...
No, I would say take it out to, like, the clean stand-up club at Streets, you know?
Okay.
Not the Improv. I'm talking the one across the street. I don't remember what that one's called.
There's one at Streets of Woodfield? There's a comedy club there?
Yeah, but it's all, like, clean comedy.
If
so it's fitting into your goals.
If you guys locally go, I will do it. That's fine. It will be an entire 10-minute set about Insidious Chapters 1 and 2.
Nice. I like it.
All right.
So we're going to talk spoiler-free about Insidious Chapter 2 for a little while. We probably will, for sure, be spoiling elements of Insidious Chapter 1, even in our spoiler-free section, and then we'll talk spoilers. Later on, we're just a few weeks away from Scary Movie Month, but of course, studios in their infinite wisdom have decided to release one of only two remaining horror films for the year in September, rather than waiting one more month.
Yeah, I looked at the lineup coming up, and it's just Carrie.
Yep.
In October.
And who can wait for that?
Me!
I'll wait all day. I've seen the trailer. I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
But before we start talking about Insidious Chapter 2... Adam.
Yes.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I have.
Good.
I've seen, I saw one really good movie in theaters and one really bad movie in theaters, so I'll start there.
All right.
Really good one was I saw Short Term 12,
yes.
Which is kind of one of the indie darlings of the year. It won, I think, the main prize at South by Southwest this year, and also an audience award, and it's a... really kind of low-budget drama starring Brie Larson, and it's about her being a supervisor at a facility for at-risk teens. And it's got John Gallagher from The Newsroom.
Yeah, not John Krasinski.
No.
He's billed.
Yeah, exactly.
On The Newsroom.
In this one, though, he's got, like, unkempt hair and a beard, so it kind of looks
so
like...
So he's John Krasinski in Away We Go.
He kind of looks like John Krasinski in Away We Go, yeah.
Got it.
I don't know if I loved it like a lot of other critics did, but that's not to say that it isn't a very good movie.
Sure.
The acting in it is really good. There is one character specifically who's one of the at-risk teens where every time they don't even have to show him, they just have to talk about him. And it's just completely, like, will knock you on your ass, devastating and emotional. And I don't know. I really liked it. I didn't think that it would be, like, in my top 10 of the year, but not every movie has to be in my top 10 of the year. Only 10 of them.
That's right.
So I would recommend it. It's limited release right now, but when it rolls out or comes on video, it's something worth watching.
Yeah, nice. All right.
Okay, the bad one.
Oh, yes.
Was I saw The Family.
The new Luc Besson?
The new Luc Besson movie. Okay, so it's as if Luc Besson never saw The Sopranos.
Okay.
And realized that this kind of thing is, there's no reason for it to exist anymore. The mob comedy, which it's completely terrible because at least half of the movie is French people are rude to this family. So they either horribly torture them, or the people who are rude to them, or blow up their grocery store, all to, like, heavy metal guitar riffs. It's just such a piece of shit movie. And, like, Robert De Niro, I know he's, like, supposed to be in witness protection, but he looks like a goddamn bum in this movie. Like, you're in a movie. Like, shave your face or, like, clean up. Get out of a bathrobe. It's like if you put a camera on a guy at, like, a flea market for 2 hours and, like, be Bob De Niro. And that's kind of how it was.
Remember when a movie starring Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer probably would have been, like, a big deal for grown-ups?
Yeah. Apparently.
And now it's just kind of like, ugh.
Apparently all the people who think it's still a big deal collected in my theater, though, last night.
Oh, really?
It was pretty crowded.
People were excited to see The Family on opening night, huh?
Yeah, I guess
I have not seen a single trailer for that movie. Yeah. All I know is what's on the poster and that I probably don't want to see it.
Here, I'm going to get you off of the
all right.
maybe don't want to see it
all right.
and
all right.
push you completely over to the side of never seeing it. It's the type of movie that references Goodfellas.
Sure.
In the movie.
Yeah.
Because...
Oh, that's current.
I'm sure, have seen these types of audience members before in a theater. It's the type... I call it the couple.
Okay.
In quotes. I'm quoting the couple.
Yes.
Which is where they put something in a movie just so the stupidest person in the audience gets it and feels smart for getting it.
Absolutely.
And then they can lean to their significant other and say, he was in Goodfellas. So, like, they can understand the joke. The best example of that was when I saw The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
And there's a part at the beginning where a cat goes into Daniel Craig's cabin on the estate that he's staying on. And this guy leans over to his wife and goes, what's he going to do with that cat?
That was the question on everyone's mind when they saw that movie.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. I will not see The Family.
Yeah, The Family, not good. And then I saw, real quick, I saw a couple of other things on DVD and cable last week because I was holed up in my apartment because of dental surgery.
Yes.
So I saw one of the movies that you and Doug suggested for a sick day. I actually emailed Doug and asked him for his recommendation. He said The Men Who Stare at Goats, and I was just like, fuck you, Doug. That's not a serious answer. I wouldn't want that on anybody. So I ended up watching The Sure Thing for the first time.
That's so funny. Real quick, at no time did I actually put any thought into what other people should watch when they are sick when we did that video. I only answered what I have watched when I was sick.
Well, that's an honest way to answer it. Yeah. I mean, like, because you can't go inside the mind of everybody when they're sick with what they would want.
So what did you think of The Sure Thing for the first time?
I really dug it.
Yeah,
I liked it a
lot. Awesome.
Yeah, I really liked it a lot. It's funny because I only knew of Daphne Zuniga from Spaceballs, so when you were, you know, like, text messaging capital letters, Zuniga, exclamation mark, I'm just like, yeah, she's fine. I'm like, in Spaceballs, but, like, I don't get it. And then, like, I watched The Sure Thing, and I'm like, okay, I get it, because she's just so charming in that movie.
Yeah, she's great.
She's real cute, and she has some of the best nonverbal acting in that movie where she just gives these little looks or kind of little shrugs and things like that where you're just like, that's a movie star, and it didn't really happen.
I mean,
Gross Anatomy, and that's better.
Yes, I mean, Spaceballs was probably the The Fly, too. Did you ever see Last Rites, where she plays a Mexican prostitute?
No.
And Tom Berenger plays a priest.
A Mexican priest?
Nope. He's a white priest. It's not good.
That's racist.
Don't see Last Rites.
No. And I'm starting to get into John Cusack movies more now.
Sure.
When I first started up with John Cusack, when I was, I don't know, maybe in my teens, I was watching a lot of crappy John Cusack movies, so that kind of turned me off to him. And now I'm going back into the archives and watching some of the good ones.
Okay.
So I've seen Say Anything, and I've seen The Sure Thing.
Okay.
What should I watch next?
Have you seen Better Off Dead?
I saw it a long time ago, and it—I think I was too young to get it.
Okay.
At the time.
I would recommend Better Off Dead.
Okay.
Gosh, you really, I mean, obviously you've seen High Fidelity.
Yeah. What about Gross Point Blank?
I'm a big Gross Point Blank fan.
Okay.
Big fan of that movie.
Okay.
You gotta give me some more time.
The Raven.
Don't see The Raven.
I've seen The Raven.
It is not good.
I'm the only person on earth who kind of likes The Raven.
Why do you kind of like The Raven? I like the idea of The Raven. I like the idea of having Edgar Allan Poe be like a crime solver.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not like The Raven.
Counter question, why don't you like Event Horizon?
That's putting me on the spot. I need to see Event Horizon again to remember why I don't like it. I remember it being a movie that worked in pieces,
mm-hmm.
but I remember not liking it so much as a whole.
Okay, that's fair.
But I need to see it again.
I don't need to see The Raven again because I know that me liking it probably will only happen once.
Yeah.
So
I can probably say that Event Horizon, to go back to that, is Paul W.S. Anderson's best movie.
Yeah.
Of the ones that I've seen.
Definitely.
I missed the last few Resident Evil sequels.
Yeah, I haven't seen any since 2.
I think I saw 3 and then I bailed.
Man, you dive deep into that series.
Yeah. I went 3 deep on Underworld before I bailed.
I haven't seen any of the Underworlds.
Oh, not one of them is good.
I'm just kind of proud of that fact.
And you would think, it's like, oh, vampires versus werewolves? I'm there opening day.
Yeah, but they look like CG shit, so it's just like, might as well not even be vampires.
It is a pile of puke. I will IMDb John Cusack and recommend some other movies that
Sounds
you should see.
Good. And then, this one was definitely fueled. My reaction was fueled probably from the prescription Vicodin that I was on. But I watched Paparazzi, the 2004 opus produced by Mel Gibson.
Yeah, and with a cameo by Mel Gibson.
With a cameo by Mel Gibson, a cameo by Chris Rock, cameo by Matthew McConaughey.
Oh my gosh.
Cameo by Vince Vaughn.
Wow.
Okay. I have a bunch of things that I need to say about Paparazzi. All right, the first thing is, Bo Laramie, played by Cole Hauser, is about to be a big star because of Adrenaline Force, which sounds like a movie title that would happen, like on a direct-to-video type action picture.
Definitely.
Do you think Cole Hauser ever was kind of embarrassed / pissed off because he's playing an actor who is more famous than Cole Hauser has ever been? Like, how does an actor do that?
Maybe it was, like, you know, fun to have some wish fulfillment for a couple weeks on set.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Tom Sizemore is scary. Wayne Grove from Heat is in it, and he is so scary.
Kevin Gage, right?
Kevin Gage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that, like, if I meet my end one day, which
it will be at the hands
it will
of
be
Kevin
at the
Gage.
End of Wayne Grove.
Did you ever see Dee Snider's Strangeland?
No.
Kevin Gage, I'm pretty sure I have this right. I want to make sure I'm not confusing him with Ted Levine. But I'm pretty sure it's Kevin Gage plays, like, the normal cop father.
Get out of here.
Like, the lead of the movie. Totally normal guy.
No.
It doesn't fit.
Well, that's the thing. That's funny that you mention that, because that happens with Paparazzi also. Like, I'm intimidated by Cole Hauser just watching him.
Yeah.
And, like, having him play, I think you mentioned it, like, having him play a normal guy is just, you feel uncomfortable the whole time.
Work. Yeah.
But I will say, at the end of the movie, when his son comes out of the coma.
I saw this movie in the theater. That was the last time I saw it. So I don't remember there being a son in a coma.
Was there anybody in the theater, like, besides whoever you were with?
I think so.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The fact that people went to the theater to see Paparazzi, is really, really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, this kid, like, just, he nails that coming out of a coma scene. I don't know what it is, but I kind of, like, had a half tear.
Really?
From the end
of
Paparazzi.
You were definitely medicated.
Yeah, it was really strange because he's just like, hi, Dad. And I was just like, and then Cole Hauser's all like, oh my God, my son's out of the coma. And then, like, it's crazy. But
it's a good call.
I don't know. Then I looked up this kid on IMDb. I'm like, what else has he been in?
Turns out just a coma.
Just a coma. But before the coma, he was that kid in Jurassic Park 3 who was Laura Dern's son.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I thought, like, the kid in Jurassic Park 3 who was, like, stuck on the island.
No, it wasn't that kid.
Yeah, I don't remember Laura Dern's son.
But, all right, here's the thing.
In JP3.
First movie, you're acting in front of Titan Laura Dern. Second movie, you nail the coma scene, and then you're out. I mean, that kid's smart.
He went out. Yeah. Went out with a bulletproof resume.
Oh, yeah, and Paparazzi's a piece of shit. Don't watch it.
It's a fascinating movie because it's one of these movies that is weirdly advocating
violence.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's justified because they're dirtbags. Mm-hmm. So go ahead and kill them, famous actor. It's Mel Gibson trying to make a movie that says it's okay for actors to murder people because they're famous and some people deserve it.
You can get away with four. As long as it's just four, then Dennis Farina, rest in peace, will let you go.
Dennis Farina was in the movie?
He's the detective.
Oh, man. It should have been Kevin Gage.
Oh, my God.
I saw some not good movies, and some that were okay. I watched a movie on Netflix called House of Fears.
Who's in that?
Oh, nobody. Okay. Except for Corey English, and I watched it because Corey English was in it, and she's one of the actresses on Holliston. And it's not even that I love her on Holliston or that she's super good, but I just was fascinated to see, well, what's her acting outside of this weird sitcom? House of Fears is one of the least scary, most poorly made horror movies I've ever seen. Maybe it premiered on Sci-Fi. That's the only thing I can figure.
Is she the blonde on Holliston?
She is, okay. Yeah. The other one is Laura Ortiz, who has a slightly better resume because she played the little mutant girl in the Hills Have Eyes remake.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I watched another movie on Netflix Instant called Love, Sick Love, that I kind of liked. I don't even know if I can recommend it. And it's one of these movies where a girl is in love with a guy and he goes to her cabin and then wouldn't you know, like, oh, things get weird. But
like you're next?
Not exactly.
Oh, okay.
It's not sadistic in the way that a lot of those movies usually are, and it has a sense of humor throughout, and Mrs. Garrett shows up, and I don't know, I kind of liked it. I think it's almost worth checking out. I'm not going to suggest that anyone's going to love it, but that's on Netflix Instant. I finally, on demand, watched The Loved Ones, which is an Australian horror movie from a couple years ago that has been recommended to me strongly for a long time, including by some of our own listeners. I believe Brad Lang from Australia was trying to convince me to watch it, probably just as a way of promoting his country.
Worldwide box office.
Yeah. I liked it. I didn't love it. And part of that, I think, is just expectations. I expected to love it. I thought it was good, well made, but it's not something that I'm going to be running back to. And that these are all horror movies, by the way, because it's still September. And lastly, yesterday was Friday the 13th, so of course I rewatched The Final Chapter and A New Beginning.
The final chapter is the one with Corey Feldman.
Correct.
Is Corey Feldman in The New Beginning also?
He has 5 minutes at the beginning in a flashback. But the main child star of A New Beginning is Dudley from Different Strokes.
What?
Shivar Ross.
Nice.
Yeah. Four is good. Final chapter, still my favorite in the series. New Beginning, one of the worst in the series. Crazy, crazy movie with crazy broad acting. Last year we did a commentary for part three and everybody goofs on Shelley. And anytime part three is written about, people say, Larry Zerner as Shelley, there's no more irritating character in a horror movie. And I take great issue with that. A, because I think Shelley is somewhat sympathetic, and B, because those people have not seen Friday the 13th part 5, A New Beginning, because everyone in that movie is so irritating.
Is that the one where they have like the mother and son that are like real yokely?
Yes.
Like, okay.
Where he's riding around on the motorcycle and she's constantly making stew
I have seen that one.
Such caricatures. You can't believe that got put in a movie. It's the one where like the mentally challenged guy at the beginning can't just be mentally challenged. He has to fucking have chocolate stains on his face.
That probably isn't true of all mentally challenged folks.
It's not a good movie.
No.
But it was a fun Friday the 13th. It was fun to go back and rewatch some of those.
For a series that I think you recognize, obviously, that these are not good movies.
Oh, for sure.
But
I think four comes the closest to being actually good.
It seems like you're more fond of Friday the 13th from my conversations of you than, say, the Halloween or Nightmare on Elm Street series as a whole.
It's weirdly getting that way. And I wonder, we talked about this a little bit, because 2 years ago, Mike and I did a Halloween podcast, and last year we did Nightmare on Elm Street. And every year I think that that's the franchise that I really like. Mm-hmm. I thought it was Halloween, but it turns out there's like 2.5 movies that I like in the Halloween series. Mm-hmm. And Nightmare on Elm Street, it turns out there's like 2 that I like in the whole series. Yeah. Friday the 13th, I wonder if it's because it started from a place of never being good.
Yeah.
So it's not like, first Halloween's great, first Nightmare on Elm Street's great. Mm. Friday the 13th was never good. Right. And so I always approach it with that expectation that they're all the same level of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, it feels more and more, as I was watching these last night, I felt like, oh, I could watch one of these movies anytime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true of one of the Halloween sequels or one of the Nightmare on Elm Street sequels.
Yeah, I have not seen many of, really, of any of these series except for Halloween. I've got big gaping holes in my Nightmare and Friday the 13th, but I will fill that during Scary Movie Month.
Yeah.
That's part of my plan, is
yes.
to knock out the entire Nightmare, Friday the 13th, and Child's Play series.
That is
Curse
fantastic.
Coming out.
Yeah, right? You're not going to buy that Friday the 13th Blu-ray box, are you?
No.
Good.
No.
Don't do it.
I'll watch them how they're supposed to be watched, edited with commercials on AMC.
During Fear Fest or yeah. Fright Fest or whatever they call
it. I'm really mad that I don't get FearNet on my cable provider.
Yeah, me
because
too.
I saw an ad where they're going to be playing Trick or Treat all day on Halloween, like Christmas Story.
Good for them.
God, why haven't they made a sequel to Trick or Treat?
Because it didn't make any money.
Not even on video?
I don't think so, but I don't know. I mean, it's certainly a movie that's well-liked and respected.
Answer me.
Yeah, it's certainly well-liked and respected in the horror community. But yeah. When I went to bed last night, I finished 4 and 5, went to bed sometime after midnight, and upstairs I only get certain channels on my TV in my bedroom. And I get a bunch of these weird UHF channels, like up in the 300, and one of the channels is just called Movies with an exclamation point. I was like, that's just fantastic. It was at a commercial, but I was like, I gotta see what's on.
Yeah.
Friday 13th Part 3. Boom! I got to watch the end of Part 3, and then they put Cujo on, and I went to sleep.
Excellent. Well, most people, you know, put on music or just, like, turn off all the lights to fall asleep.
Nope.
Patrick puts on Friday the 13th,
Friday 13th
Part 3,
part
followed
three.
By Cujo.
Yeah, it was totally the right way to fall asleep.
Excellent.
Anyway, I'm getting excited for October. Let's talk about Insidious Chapter 2.
Yeah.
Here's how you know how this series should be taken a little bit more seriously. It's not Part 2. It's Chapter 2. It's an ongoing series.
I felt like that almost works against the movie because now I'm expecting it to have the same level of ambition as Kill Bill Volume 2. Like, this isn't just some toss-in-the-bucket sequel.
No.
This is a saga.
It's a Chapter 2. Yeah. We'll get to one of my issues with the whole Chapter 2 when we get into spoilers. But go ahead. I just saw the movie a few hours ago, so it's still rattling around in my head. Mm-hmm. You, however, have already seen the movie twice.
All right. I didn't deliberately see the movie twice. I saw it on Thursday night.
Yeah, the way it was meant to be
seen. The way it was meant to be seen.
Was it crowded?
Yeah. I mean, it was maybe like half full.
Okay.
So I saw it Thursday night, and then I saw it again today because, and Mark, on sort of recommendation, I went to go see The Grandmaster, and I was in there for 10 minutes, and I realized that I was more just, I probably just wanted Chinese food more than, like, even watching this movie. I don't know. That sounds terrible, but it's just a joke. I've already cleared it with Mark on. He said that's not a racist joke.
Oh, so, wait, do we have to clear all the jokes through Mark on?
If they're anything involving Asia,
shoot.
Even the band Asia, I clear them with Mark on.
There goes my 5 minutes of heat of the moment material.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn it.
So, no, I can't say The Grandmaster is a bad movie because I watched 10 or 15 minutes of it, but I just wasn't feeling it at the time. So I was like, I guess I'll watch Insidious 2 again. So, all right, here's what I think about Insidious 2, kind of in a nutshell overall. It's not as good as the first movie. It is like the last third of the first Insidious for a full-length feature.
Yeah.
That being said, I still found it entertaining.
Sure.
I liked it overall, even though I recognize that it is a terrible screenplay. And probably if you had to judge by anything other than fun, it's probably a bad movie more than a good movie. Yeah. I still like it, though.
Okay. I guess I thought it was, like, okay. And we'll talk about the first movie, I'm sure. You know, I still haven't quite reconciled the last third of Insidious. Mm-hmm. That's probably my least favorite stuff in the movie. And I usually like a movie that goes somewhere crazy, and Insidious certainly does.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, I'm not totally on board with that last third. And so you saying that this is the last third for the whole movie kind of speaks to maybe why I wasn't crazy about a lot of stuff in it. But I would absolutely agree with you that I think it's a very well-directed movie that James Wan continues to prove that he really knows how to direct the hell out of a movie. But the screenplay really gets in the way, and there's a lot of sort of uneven performances. I was entertained by it. I was never bored. It contains a moment that ranks with Zelda and Pet Sematary as one of the scariest things I've ever seen in a movie.
Do you want to say what that is? Because I think that I know which scene you're talking about.
It's, we'll talk about it in spoilers, but it involves the kid under the sheet.
Okay.
But we'll talk about it again. So I was frustrated by it, I guess.
Yeah. I think that, let's start with the script, I guess.
Okay.
Here's what I think of it. It's so dreamlike. And just kind of nightmarish in a way, where it doesn't make much literal sense of what's going on, especially how certain scenes follow other certain scenes.
Yeah.
It's very kind of just jumbled together. It feels like Lee Whannell wrote it all between 3 and 4 in the morning and did not proofread it, and then they shot what he wrote the next day. That's kind of how I felt.
The first 2/3 of Insidious I like, and not just because it seems like Poltergeist, you know.
I think it's better than Poltergeist.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. But that was really the first movie that kind of made me sit up and take James Wan a little bit more seriously. Because I've come around on Saw. Dead Silence, I'm going to revisit in October because I know he's trying. But and Death Sentence, I have mixed feelings on. So Insidious was like, oh, wait, this is something. But I like it better when it is just, there's a lot of really scary stuff in the first 2/3 of that movie. Yeah. And I like it when it's that stuff. It reminded me of when they first watched the tape in The Ring and it's all these weird disassociated images and it's really creepy and you don't know why. And then they spend the rest of the movie explaining what all those images are and why, what the context is. And it takes all the scary out of them. That to me becomes sort of the last third and all of Insidious Chapter 2 when it's just pointing to, well, this is this and this is this and here's this rule and here's this mythology. This movie just, Chapter 2 keeps trying to create a mythology, and it reminded me of what some of my problems were with Dead Silence, where it's like where they're trying to build this horror icon mythology from the ground up in a very short amount of time, and so they come up with all these rules and legends and, oh yeah, this is this. I couldn't believe how much time in this movie was devoted to a character that previously hadn't been mentioned. I don't want to say what it is, but everything hinges on somebody that we meet in a flashback that has never been talked about before in an entire movie. Yeah. That surprised me.
Are you talking about the guy who looks like Steve Coogan? With the beard?
No.
Oh, okay.
That guy.
Yeah.
No.
Not Tucker and Specs, but the other guy.
No, I know.
Old dude with the beard.
That guy shows up and suddenly is very important. I'm talking exactly about like the guy in the hospital.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. He looks exactly like AARP Steve Coogan to me. It was distracting.
His acting was a little distracting to me, but...
But to talk about kind of what you were saying with the first 2/3 of the first Insidious really working for you from a scare perspective, I completely agree. I love The Conjuring. I really like the first Insidious. I think the first Insidious is a scarier movie than The Conjuring, and it's a scarier movie than Insidious 2.
I agree with that,
for
too.
For sure.
Yeah. Who's that red face dude?
Yeah.
That guy's terrifying.
That guy is not cool.
No.
That guy is, something not chill is happening in that house.
And that, I don't mean to interrupt, but like so much of what I like about the first Insidious is that it has those scares, but it's also a little bit more sort of fantastical. And it's like, here's crazy ghosts and demons. And I like that stuff. And then I like The Conjuring because it plays it just a little bit more straight. And I wish there was some sort of combination of the two, because the stuff I like about The Conjuring is how grounded it is. The stuff I like about Insidious is how wacky it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, I got a tie-in from an interview that I read with Lee Whannell and James Wan, and they talked about that specifically. Okay. So James Wan said that in the first two-thirds of Insidious, in the first one, that he was trying to make it just kind of more of a straightforward haunted house movie.
Yeah.
And then the stuff that he really was interested in was the crazy stuff at the end where he could go nuts and be original. Him and Lee Whannell, were really kind of setting it up so they could earn that
right
at the end of the movie.
Okay.
And he said that he read the reviews and heard the reviews coming out of Insidious and said, well, everybody seemed to like the first two-thirds. So, and nobody seemed to really like the last third. Everybody was like, what the fuck was that?
Mm-hmm.
So he made The Conjuring as an answer to that, where he's like, okay, if you like the first two-thirds, The Conjuring is first two-thirds of Insidious.
Right.
And then for Insidious 2, that they kind of knew that they backed themselves into a certain corner, and they had to continue to go kind of more and more crazy with it. So he said that... So James Wan said that his impulse more is around like how he would direct the first two-thirds of Insidious and The Conjuring. But Lee Whannell's influence when they collaborate is to go more bizarre and more over the top. Mm-hmm. So that was so I almost see Insidious Chapter 2 being really kind of the creative work of Lee Whannell more than James Wan.
And maybe it turns out that I'm just not the world's biggest Lee Whannell fan. And I want to be, because he seems like a nice guy and he has a good sense of humor. And although I would argue that the attempts at humor in Insidious Chapter 2 fall flat.
Yeah, I didn't laugh
every single time.
Yeah.
And they really stick out. Mm-hmm. Which isn't to say that the movie isn't fun, but it's not fun. It doesn't need to be jokey to be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I like what Lee Whannell is trying to do, but again, I just felt like so many of the problems come back to a lot of the problems that I have with Dead Silence, and I'm trying to remember Dead Silence, but it's a lot of characters having to explain things to one another all the time, and sort of the screenplay pulling things out of midair that suddenly becomes part of the rules, and I take issue with that.
Yeah, Insidious Chapter 2 definitely has a feel of they're just kind of making it up as it goes along.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things that they do to loop it back to the first movie, it does not ever feel like they had that in mind when they were making the first movie. It's like, oh, this is a convenient way that we could exploit this coincidence.
Right.
So, I completely agree with you on that one.
I like the imagery. I mean, again, it's not that I mind them going to Crazy World.
Yeah.
Whatever the
that name's problematic.
The way that it's handled, that's fine. The imagery is fine. I'm down with all that. It's just, I guess I have some screenplay issues.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that too, because the imagery and the art direction is just so good.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
Because if you, like me and you, like really love horror movies, it has a very October horror movie feel to it. It's like, it looks like a haunted house. It's something that it's aesthetically pleasing. It's just this cool thing. And I actually heard that the house that they use in the prologue and Barbara Hershey's house in the second movie is this famous estate, and they used it in Spider Baby.
Really?
So I don't know.
That's cool.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah. They should have had the ghost of Jill Banner in the movie.
Oh, man.
I would have really liked it.
Oh, man. Everybody would be masturbating, so that would be problematic. But the color usage and everything in the movie.
The repetition of the red door and the red window, I really like.
It's really great.
Yeah,
it's
there's really a lot cool of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in it that I really like. It's just, there's certain lines of dialogue that I want to point to, but I won't. Let me ask you this, and I don't feel like this is a spoiler, because the movie opens with a flashback.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see Jocelyn Donahue.
Thank you for mentioning that, because...
Star of House of the Devil.
Oh, my God, it's nice to see Jocelyn Donahue back in a movie.
Yeah.
She's in, Kit Kat commercials, and, DiGiorno commercials, yeah. And I'm like, don't they know this is the girl from the, one of the best horror movies in the last 5 years?
And yet Greta Gerwig is the one who popped off of that, so.
I don't know. Here, if Jocelyn Donahue is listening to this.
I'm guessing she is.
Then email F this movie and tell me where to meet and we will get married. 31 years old, gainfully employed. I'm not ready. I'm not messing around. I will treat you like a princess. So,
side note, Ty West's movie got picked up by Magnolia,
which means it will go on video on demand.
On demand.
Yeah. Boom. Nice.
I did not know it was found footage, though.
Yeah.
This makes me sad.
Yeah.
But okay.
I also didn't know that it was a riff on Jonestown.
Yeah, I knew.
And then I read about Jonestown on Wikipedia, and then I got real sad.
So it opens with this flashback, and Jocelyn Donahue plays young Barbara Hershey, which is great casting. What is the deal, though? And the actress who plays the actress who plays young Lin Shaye. Again, great casting.
Mm-hmm. Looks like my friend Abby.
Okay, hi Abby. But what is the deal with looping her voice?
That was so distracting.
Yes.
And to start off your movie that way,
yes.
It basically is like, here, instead of 2 steps forward, let's push you 10 steps back.
So then I had to wonder, because I was in the theater with mostly young people, because it's a PG-13 horror movie, and so they're all like around 15.
Mm-hmm.
None of them probably realize that it's being looped with Lin Shaye. So maybe it's not distracting for them, but I could not concentrate on anything else. And what a weird choice.
Yeah, I couldn't concentrate on anything either because I think the reason why they did it is they don't trust the audience to remember that that's Lin Shaye's character.
But why do they trust the audience to remember that that's Barbara Hershey's character? Because they look so much alike?
I don't know.
It's such a weird choice.
Because they knew that if they looped over Jocelyn Donahue's wonderful voice, that I would storm out of the theater.
I had the same thought, that they do it so that we realize that it's Lin Shaye, but it is really distracting.
Yeah, and also that guy looks like he has a really fake beard.
Yes.
Like, we wouldn't get that it was him if he shaved. People can grow beards over about 30 years. So.
So the movie starts in a weird place, and then I took issue a little bit. Again, it's not a deal breaker, but I felt like the last movie ends where it ends. And again, we said we would be spoiling the first Insidious, and so we're going to. Patrick Wilson comes back from the further, only he's possessed. It's not him. You know, we're not sure, but he basically murders Lin Shaye, and that's how the movie ends. Like, boom, it's not over. Mm-hmm. Patrick Wilson is evil now. And this movie opens, and it takes so long to get going, it almost starts back from zero, because it's like, oh, now we're in a new house, but oh, there's ghosts popping up again. We got to go through the whole thing where it's like, oh, I don't think it's over. We appear to still be haunted. Like, start from that place and just hit the ground running. And I felt like this movie took a long time to reset.
Well, I think they did the prologue just so they could set up that new character coming.
Yeah, which is fine.
Because otherwise you wouldn't have a real clean way of introducing him later. But that's not to say that the sequence works, because it really doesn't.
No, and that didn't even bother me as much as the next half hour.
They almost should have opened it like they open a Friday the 13th movie.
With where just flashbacks.
You show like about a minute to catch up from the first movie to catch you up to where you were, and then here we go. And the thing that they totally do just such a cop-out chicken shit thing on the ending of the first movie, and I know, I guess, we're not supposed to think, oh no, like he's possessed and he's evil and he's going to kill Rose Byrne, like how you thought at the end of the first movie.
Right.
But that's a cool ending to a movie.
Right.
And then you completely get that tossed away with he's just touches her on the shoulder. He's like, no, no, it's me. Yeah. It's Patrick Wilson. And like, Patrick Wilson's cool, but I mean, like, what? It's just a weird way to, like, It's like they realized that they backed themselves into a corner, and they said, well, fuck it. Let's just let's not worry about it, and let's just kind of keep going.
Right. I just felt like they spent a good half hour to 45 minutes basically repeating the first 45 minutes of the first movie where weird things are going on, and we're not sure, and are we still being haunted, or aren't we, and who can I trust? I wanted them to sort of take off from a place more of where they left off, just in terms of the energy and the immediacy of what's going on instead of...
Yeah, this one felt very set piecey too to me, whereas opposed to having kind of a story that had momentum, it was more, this is the scene where, you know, the piano's playing and Rose Byrne has to find where her baby is and stuff like that.
Multiple times.
Yeah, a lot of times. yeah, but I don't know. I think that's one of the two scary sequences in the movie, though. That's kind of my...
How dare you, are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I think that's kind of my problem with the second one compared to the first one is just the first one had, I could probably name five different scenes that were really scary, and I don't get that scared at horror movies.
I rarely do. And again, I think most of the times the scares are basically just, boo, something jumps out at you, and it does it really well, but that's not, for me, something that's really lasting.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. But with the second one, I could just count two. It's the one with the where one of the main two villain ghosts comes out and says, "How dare you!" out of nowhere and punches Rose Byrne and knocks her out. That was one.
Yeah.
And then another one was the girl running out of the closet.
That's the
one. Your Zelda.
That's the Zelda.
Yeah. That was
my God.
Pretty Zelda-esque. And then it cuts right to the Carnival of Souls moments.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
Yes.
And they show Carnival of Souls, which is my favorite horror movie of all time, on the TV.
Yes.
So between that and Jocelyn Donahue, that's automatic 3 stars.
Well, I will say that I did feel like this movie was really referencing a lot of other horror movies, not in a super obnoxious way. I mean, I think the Carnival of Souls thing is almost a little too on the nose, in terms of the way that it quotes it visually later on, but also this idea of, I don't want to spoil Carnival of Souls, but sort of what that movie's about is also a little bit of what's going on in Insidious Chapter 2. But obviously, I mean, there's Shining references at the end. The whole thing is sort of this Amityville reference.
The Shining one really bothered me. That was the reference that I thought was way too literal, and it felt like the TV version of The Shining. And that's never a
because
good thing
of Steven Weber.
Yeah, because you got Steven Weber, who's not threatening, and you got Patrick Wilson, who I really like as an actor.
Yeah,
and I think he's part of the reason why Insidious 2 works as well as it even does.
Yeah,
because between this and like The Conjuring and the first Insidious, he has a way of kind of settling down things that are so just. He's never over the top.
Yeah,
so he makes things that are already kind of fantastic not seem so outlandish where you're just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Because he's almost always like a normal guy, audience surrogate type of person.
Yeah. I think his performance is probably the best one in the movie because I want to like Rose Byrne, and it's not that she's bad. She's fine. Mm-hmm. She gets a ton of work. She's in so many movies. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anything except for maybe Bridesmaids where I said, boy, that Rose Byrne was really good.
I like Rose Byrne. I think she's good in Get Him to the Greek. I think she's
She's fine in that. I forgot that she was in that, honestly.
She was good in Sunshine, I thought.
Okay. I mean, in Sunshine, to me, it was like Insidious Chapter 2. It's like she gets the job done, but that's it. To me, she's like just this side of being another Gemma Arterton.
You mean Gretel?
Well, that's the thing. At least Gemma Arterton.
Call her by her given name.
At least Gemma Arterton now has Gretel going for her. So when I see her in the preview for Runner Runner before every goddamn movie I see, I think, I want to watch Hats on the Gretel Witch Hunters again. Yeah. Like, she brings up fond memories. I have nothing with Rose Byrne. I'm not like, ooh, I can't wait to watch her in this movie.
Yeah, I like Rose Byrne enough, but I agree with you. Like, she's got nothing to do in this movie except to get punched.
And be worried about her baby. Yeah. And that's fine. They do it a lot, you know.
Can I talk about the kids for a second?
Absolutely.
Okay. There's two sons.
Yeah.
There's the one who
one
can
who's
astral
a total
project.
Pussy.
Yeah. There's the one who can astral project.
Yeah.
And then there's the other one who never is haunted. Nothing ever bad happens to him.
Nope.
It's really weird because this whole family's being put through the ringer.
Yeah.
And he's basically just like, hey, man, I'm gonna like go to Pizza Hut. I'm fine.
Check it out. I made a tin can on a string.
Yeah.
Anybody want to haunt me?
He's just like, you know what? You guys have been a real downer recently. And I'm going to go hang out at my friend's house. Mom's making stovetop.
I got my eyes closed. I'm turned around. Yeah. Any ghosts want to come in?
Like, this kid.
I'm worth haunting, too.
He's TBTH, too boring to haunt.
I want to feel validated, ghosts. So where, okay, let me, I need to say this, too, because yeah. I love our readers and our listeners. I think we have a great, great community. I feel very, very fortunate to have the people that we have, participating in the comments, talking to us on Twitter. Everybody who's a part of our site is great. Having said that, I'm a little disappointed in them because several months ago, The Conjuring came out and you wrote a review. And you ended it by saying, like, I love One Direction.
Yeah.
And that joke is so golden and no one called attention to it. And I was okay. Heartbroken.
Well, thanks for calling attention to it now.
Because I was so upset that not one person in the comments said, holy shit, that One Direction joke is the best.
Well, they're just mad because they didn't think of it.
So having said that,
yeah.
Where for you does this, before we go into spoilers, where does this rank? I know you'd said not as good as The Conjuring or Insidious. Where does it rank in terms of One Direction?
Okay. So he's made 6 movies now?
Sure.
All right. So he's made The Conjuring, Insidious 1 and 2, Saw.
Death Sentence. Dead Silence.
Okay, all right, I'll go from worst to best.
All right.
All right, worst Death Sentence, just because I don't, it passes my threshold of ugliness.
Okay.
Dead Silence.
Okay.
Saw.
Okay.
Insidious 2.
Okay.
Insidious, and his best is The Conjuring.
All right.
So, that. How about you?
There you have it, everyone. I mean, mine's probably not that different, although I might put Saw above Insidious 2. I don't know.
Do you think that they were trying?
Sounds kind of bad.
Before we get into spoilers, I kind of felt like, or actually maybe this would be part of spoilers, but okay. I think that I felt elements of Saw in this one, in Insidious 2.
Okay, in terms of, is it a spoiler?
Backstories.
Yeah, well that's, again, this is Lee Whannell's thing, and Dead Silence is the same thing. It's like, take it easy with the backstory. And I also have a little bit of a problem, and I don't think this is a spoiler. Either Lee Whannell or James Wan, although I think it's more Lee Whannell, is a little bit transparent in his, like, I think people would find this scary approach to writing horror movies. In Saw, it's the little puppet on the tricycle. It makes no sense that a human being would come up with that, except if he was like, oh, this would scare audiences, not the people that I have trapped in my bathroom. The first Insidious does it a little bit with that Tiny Tim song.
Yeah.
It you know, the juxtaposition of, oh, this quirky song and scary images. And then in this movie, it's a lot of, like, rocking horses going on their own. The ghost singing, row, row, row your boat. Like, what the hell is that? That doesn't...
That's a standard. Why?
I know, right. That's the thing. It's like, well, we don't have to pay for it.
Yeah. But it just wanted her to be like, hey, blurred line.
It just seems like she didn't really need to sing anything, or she could have just been saying something that we didn't understand. Sometimes I just feel like there's this mentality of like, oh, and wouldn't this be kind of fucked up? And when I can see through that, it's not scary to me.
Yeah.
That's all.
That makes sense.
It's a lot of the Saw puppet, I guess. He does that a lot.
Yeah, yeah. They do a lot of shit with, like, the baby walker, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
At some point, wouldn't they just take the batteries out of the baby walker?
No, because you see how cool the lights are?
It's a fucking alarm system. Yeah. My God.
Yeah.
All right, so now we're going to get into spoilers for Insidious Chapter 2. If you don't want it spoiled, turn it off. If you've seen it or you don't care, keep listening.
So would you say that you would recommend seeing it?
I think, oh gosh, if you were a fan of the first movie or if you're a fan of horror movies that make you kind of jump, I think it's a well-directed movie, but I think it's a little bit of a mess in terms of story, and I don't think there's really any characters to grab onto. So it's like walking through a haunted house, kind of, you know, where it's like, that was fun for that 90 minutes, but...
Yeah, it reminded me of, I went to Vegas for work, like, last fall, and they have
Adam's a prostitute.
I am. Yeah, they.
I'm kidding. He's a stage magician.
Yeah, I am. So yeah, you can find Eli Roth's Goratorium, which is a haunted house in Vegas that was, I don't know, christened by Eli Roth.
Sure.
And it reminded me, Insidious Chapter 2 reminded me a lot of walking through the Goratorium,
okay.
where it's just a lot of actors who are, like, really into it, who are just scaring the shit out of you because
right.
they're way too committed. But I got a good I got a good story about that real quick.
All right.
So I was walking through the Goratorium, and that was the type of thing where I didn't want to, like, ask anybody that I was with from work. It's like, hey, you want to go to the Goratorium? Because I have to be, like, a certain way at work, which is not the guy who wants to go to the Goratorium.
Right, right.
So, but I totally did. So I snuck off and went to the Goratorium, and I'm in there by myself. So, like, literally, there's no other people. It's just these actors playing for me. So I walked into their, they had a setup where you're walking into a kitchen, and I walked through too quickly, and a guy just goes, oh, fuck. And then, and then he, like, had to get into character real quick and scare me.
It's hard to scare you after they pulled back the curtain in that
yeah,
way.
It was a little disappointing.
I hate haunted houses. I won't go in haunted houses.
Yeah, I remember you told me that.
Yeah, not a fan.
I'm sorry.
Love horror movies, hate haunted houses.
Yeah, why? Because do you just get scared and want to punch them and run away?
I guess. I don't like people jumping out at me. I really don't. In a movie, I don't mind it. In Insidious Chapter 2, it can be cool. But again, the scariest thing in Insidious Chapter 2 isn't rocking horses going on their own. It's not anybody singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat or Tiptoe Through the Tulips. It's this image that you don't understand why you just saw it.
Yeah.
It's that woman coming out of the closet, which is fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
And then to cap it off, then all of a sudden it's 20 ghosts charging you in bed straight out of Carnival of Souls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I laughed to myself in the theater when that scene ended as a way of saying, oh, that worked on me.
Yeah.
when they have to explain every single thing about what you've seen, it becomes less scary. And that's so much of what this movie is.
Yeah, because I think they go, oh, like, they bend over backwards to try to make the backstory sort of disturbing.
Yeah.
It involves, it's like Psycho, sort of, where it's a overpossessive mother who fucks up a kid so much that he turns into a serial killer.
Your name is Marilyn.
Your name is Marilyn. She wanted him to be a boy. So grown-up version of
it's Sleepaway Camp, isn't it?
Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah.
So he's in the hospital. So the boy, when he's an adult, when he's a serial killer, is in the hospital because he castrated himself.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's on its face. I mean, it's a pretty disturbing story, but...
But it doesn't work in the movie where you travel to the other dimension. You know what I mean? Like, that's enough.
Yeah.
That we're going to another dimension and seeing ghosts. Mm. We don't need backstory of a serial killer. We're finding all the bodies. He's castrating himself.
Yeah.
When the kid goes to the hospital with Jocelyn Donahue, so it's more screen time for her, which is great.
Oh, so good.
That scene is fine. Like, he's looking at the knobs, we swing the camera back, the old dude is like, bah! And it's, you jump again, and it's scary. And I thought that was the end of it. It's like, oh, this guy turns out to be the whole story?
He's
like
Tobin Bell and Saw.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, so much of it revolves around this guy that I thought was just this throwaway scene.
Yeah. It's weird, but I gotta ask you this, because this is something I was thinking during that hospital flashback.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice to marry Jocelyn Dunn?
Well, besides that, that's already been established. Email at this movie.
Podcast@gmail.com.
Podcast@gmail.com, and I will meet you anywhere. We don't even have to, like, live together.
What if she asks to meet you in the further?
Then I'll figure out, I'll MapQuest it. Just give me the address.
You'll go to sleep in a basement within 3 seconds, even though your dad is beating down door after door, and you're just sleeping through it with your tin can on a string.
Girl, you'll make me astral project, I promise. for real. For real, dog. Where was I?
The hospital sequence?
Okay, the hospital sequence. Okay. So, wouldn't it be a better movie if they ignore the Lamberts?
Yeah.
So the first movie ends, Rose Byrne presumably is going to get attacked by possessed Patrick Wilson. Movie ends. Wouldn't it be a better movie if, say, I don't know, like Jocelyn Donahue doesn't necessarily have to be grown up Barbara, or the younger version right. of Barbara Hershey, and that's not necessarily her son from who grows up to be Patrick Wilson, but there's a lot of specters and spirits in The Further. Why right. can't we see another, like a haunted hospital movie where it's stuff from The Further coming there? And then that's your Insidious Chapter 2. And right. then it just becomes this haunted something series. So it's The Haunted House. Now it's The Haunted Hospital. And then
better name for the movie.
The Haunted Hospital. Yeah.
Get rid of this Insidious nonsense. People don't even know what that word means. Call it The Haunted Hospital. Mm-hmm. Well, this is something that I wanted to bring up. They start in that direction at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I wanted it to end at the fade to white because I thought, wow, what a positive,
no.
nice ending for this movie.
Yeah.
Like, the family is ready to move on. A fade to white in a horror movie? Oh my gosh, that's positively uplifting. No, it doesn't end. Okay, fine. Because where it takes us is Specs and the bear are...
Tucker
are visiting another house. Okay, the story continues. We're done with that family, exactly like you said.
Mm-hmm.
We've given them closure, but we can find new adventures, new ghosts with these two guys. They go to another house. They answer the door. I'm like, okay, the movie should have ended, but it hasn't. Okay, the girl says, who's that woman? Cut to Lynn Shay. Gives a little shush. Fine. End your movie. Yeah. End your movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. We know there's going to be more adventures. We know that Lin Che is now a ghost who's like their guide.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have the stupid cliffhanger feeling of where it goes to, which is Lin Che looking at nothing
mm-hmm.
horrified.
Yeah. It works so well in The Conjuring, and it doesn't work at all at the end of Insidious 2.
What was the end of The Conjuring?
It wasn't the end of The Conjuring.
Oh, okay.
But, like, there was where Joey King was in bed, and she says, like, I can see something.
Oh,
And, like, you never see it, but it's still freaky.
Yeah.
It's
freaky in the first movie. Not in the first movie. In this movie, when the kid is sleeping and says, Grandma, there's somebody behind you.
Yeah.
You don't, later on, you do end up seeing it, but at first you don't, but you're still terrified by this notion of this kid sleeping, saying there's someone behind you.
Yeah, I have nothing to prove my point here, but I'm guessing the reason why they kind of ended it with the cliffhanger thing was because Insidious was the first Insidious was the most profitable movie of the year it came out. It like was a $1.5 million budget.
Yeah.
It made like $100 million worldwide.
Yeah.
And this one I think cost like $15 million.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
And they'll totally make...
They should have spent two on it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, if they did the first one for $1.5 million, why did this one cost $15 million?
Jocelyn Donahue. So,
I forgot. It takes $11 million a movie.
I want a big wedding. I'm thinking that James Wan and Lee Whannell will probably sever their ties with the Insidious franchise at this point.
Yeah, and hand it off to Darren Lynn Bousman.
Hand it off to Darren Lynn Bousman, and they're basically saying to Film District or whoever owns them, they're saying, look, leave the Lamberts alone. We gave you something to start with.
Right.
We don't give a shit if you want to, like, milk the Lin Shay teats all you want for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
This is where you can pick it up.
Right.
So that's kind of why I'm thinking they did that.
It
doesn't work for the movie, though.
Get it from a business standpoint. I don't get it from a movie standpoint, especially when they don't even bother to show you who walks out of the movie feeling scared. I mean, every horror movie has to end with that. It's not over. There's still something scary. Okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But who walks out of that movie feeling anything but gypped? It's like, oh, Lin Che sees something scary that we don't see. Who gives a shit? We know she's going to see things that are scary.
I thought I missed something, because the first time I saw it, I, like you, felt gypped. But then the second time I saw it, I was like, there's got to be something there. So I was like looking around and trying to see, like, in the corners of the screen and the frame. I'm like, there's something there. Because at the end of The Innkeepers, they do that too, where the first time I saw it, you think that something is going to happen, but it looks like nothing happens and then the door shuts.
Yeah.
But then, like, when I saw it later on Blu-ray, you could see that there's a ghost in a curtain.
I still haven't seen the ghost in the curtain.
Oh, okay. Do you have the Innkeeper?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll show you later.
Okay.
All right. So, no, but, like, you could see... spoiler for the Innkeeper? No, I won't do it.
Yeah, don't do
it. I won't do it. But
people should see that movie.
Yeah, people should. And it's almost October.
Yeah, right?
That could be your cheat. You could watch it in September. And then you could watch it again in October, because who gives a shit? Because the Innkeeper is this boss.
It is really good, everyone.
But yeah, in Insidious 2, nope, nothing.
It reminded me of a couple years ago at a massacre, they showed, I can never remember if it's, and I went back and forth with this with Heath Holland a couple months ago, I can't remember if it's House by the Cemetery or City of the Living Dead. It's one of those two.
Okay.
And it ends with this crazy little blonde yeah, kid running, like, to, and it's like... Yeah. There's a looped scream, even though nothing you're seeing is scary, but everything on the soundtrack is like, no, no, ah! It's just a smiling kid running towards them.
Yeah.
Maybe, that's what it reminded me of.
Maybe, like, it's a fear of fatherhood.
It's generating a scare where there isn't one.
Yeah. It's stupid.
It was a bad ending. Especially when they had two endings already that would have been just fine.
Yeah, I wouldn't really like the fade to white thing.
Yeah. I'll even take... Lin Shaye doing the shush, like, that's fine, because it's not a mean-spirited ending. It's just, yeah. I'm a ghost, I'm along for the ride. There's more adventures in store.
I did think, though, that Lin Shaye's basically become maybe sort of the focal point of this series.
Yeah.
Which I think is a little weird.
The adventures of ghost Lin Shaye.
Yeah, and especially because, all right, remember the dude who looked like the crow ghost from the first movie?
Yeah.
The one who was, like, in the baby's room and stuff? Okay, so he's in the second one.
The Mark Dacascos ghost?
The Mark Dacascos ghost?
Mark Dacascos.
Oh, God, that's so good. I wish I came up with that.
Please, you have one direction.
Only the strong. So Patrick Wilson's getting his ass kicked by Mark Dacascos, and, like, then Lin Shaye comes in with a lantern, and she's basically like, stupefied!
Yeah.
Like, goes out a window, and I'm just like, when did she become a dream warrior? Yeah. Like, what is this?
None of that shit makes sense. And then, again, they're inventing rules as they go, where it's like, destroy her memories, and she'll go away, and then they're smashing rocking horses, and then ghosts are flying backwards. I didn't think so much of the stuff where they try and explain the mythology worked.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when what is supposed to be the real world, when we're flashing back to Parker / Marilyn's childhood, and yet the mom is in full ghost makeup, even though she's supposed to be just regular mom at that point.
Yeah, that was pretty
bad. None of that shit works.
No.
And all the murdered women.
Yeah.
They're trying to introduce things that just don't.
I've got a
they don't work.
I've got a theory, though, about this Parker character.
All right.
Parker Marilyn character.
Let's hear it.
All right. So he grabbed young Patrick Wilson because he wanted to take over his body because he wanted a childhood.
Right.
Okay.
Which is embarrassing when they say
it's
like
horseshit. There's one line later that's more embarrassing than that.
Was it, I felt your heartbeat when we hugged?
No.
You're still alive?
No.
Can't she just say, go back, you're not ready yet? And do we need the explanation of, I felt your heartbeat when we hugged, you're not dead?
Okay. The worst line in this movie, and maybe the worst line of any movie in 2013, is when Patrick Wilson is in his shining mode and he's chasing Rose Byrne.
Yeah.
And then they slam the door on his hand.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And he goes, pain! I feel pain! I like it! But I like it more inflicting pain on others!
That was pretty bad.
That was horrible!
That was this horrible. Movie has a lot of bad lines, though.
Yeah,
like, a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Lee Winnell. So, I think that Parker Marilyn is wanting to be... young Patrick Wilson, because he's going to get to live with Jocelyn Donahue, who's a single mom. And then he's going to get to marry Rose Byrne? Not bad, Parker goes.
I would stay with my mom.
Yeah.
If the choice is between living with... possibly even if my mom grew up to be Barbara Hershey, although Barbara Hershey is so mannered at this point, what is she doing?
I don't know. She talks like she just got four wisdom teeth.
It's very strange, and I can't tell if that's an acting choice or if that's just that Barbara Hershey.
That's Meisner, baby.
Is just like, I'm an aging actress, theater! You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
She's very mannered, and the movie sends her off with the two bumbling ghost chasers for their own adventure. And again, there's so much attempt at...
And one of them's eating an apple pie because he's fat. So you have to be reminded of this.
Right? I mean, they try and diffuse the tension in the last moment by having him bust in. Like, I thought the one almost genuine laugh was when the camera pans back to him. Because it's more of a... It's almost a filmmaking joke. It's not some stupid, funny line. But the camera pans back to him and he's still asleep. Of course, they then have to insert, like, a snoring sound. Because we wouldn't know he was sleeping otherwise. But I thought that was okay. Otherwise, I thought all of the attempts at humor really fell flat.
Yeah, I didn't think this one was really funny at all.
No. And it doesn't necessarily need to be.
No.
So maybe just leave it with no jokes.
Yeah. Another thing that I kind of was bummed out about with the second one was the first one I thought was did a really good job of making the family characters and relatable people.
Right.
Whereas this one has really no interest in anything like that.
We're supposed to be invested just because they're the family from the first movie, but you don't know anything about them except she wrote a song for him.
Yeah. Great song, by the way.
He plays it so badly.
Did you order the soundtrack yet?
To me, it sounded like he played it exactly the way she then plays it to recognize her own song, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
And she has to sit down and play a few bars, and then she's like, I know what that is. It's the song that I fucking wrote. I might recognize the song that I wrote if a ghost was playing it for me.
Yeah, and like
to tell me that he was stuck in the further. These are things that happen.
I know she's a musician, right? But like she never seems to be like making any money off of this music. So this poor guy is possessed, still going to work, teaching children so he can afford this mortgage that they've got and three children. It's like, all right, you've seen Love and Other Drugs, right?
Yes.
Okay, so, like, Anne Hathaway in that movie, like, I'm pretty sure she's, like, this macrame artist or something where she basically just takes, like, a poster board and, like, cuts out pictures of her and, like, Jake Gyllenhaal hanging out.
Yes.
And, like, glues them to a poster board. Apparently, like, that's enough for her to, like, sustain an apartment and, like, have medicine.
It's enough for her to have a wacky bohemian lifestyle.
Exactly.
Because that's what that movie's about.
So, between her and Rose Byrne, I don't get it. It's, like... Is their job just to, like, inspire boners and that's it?
Yes! For sure with Anne Hathaway. Not as much with Rose Byrne.
Okay.
Rose Byrne is at least raising a family.
Yeah.
At least. Not doing a great job. The baby's getting kidnapped. The son's getting put into a coma, taken to the further. But she's got that other one. That third one. She's doing a great job with him.
She seems He's to be engaged. Able to, yeah, she seems to be able to get a lot of timeouts from taking care of her baby. Like, I know parents who have newborn babies, and they're with their baby all the time. Like, the baby's in every room that they're in. But no, she's just like...
That baby's constantly in the crib.
That baby constantly. Is all over the place.
And I feel like that might be just because What's-His-Name produced it, Oren Peli, and that's his big move in Paranormal Activity, right? Okay. It's like, put the baby in the bed. Although, no, that's not fair, because that's Paranormal Activity 2, right? And I don't think he made that one.
How dare you be unfair to Oren Peli.
If there's one thing I want to be in this world... It's fair to Oren Peli.
You should.
Anyway, so I didn't hate the movie. There's a lot of things in it that I liked, and again, it demonstrates that James Wan is a really good director, and I'm so pulling for like the creative team of him and Lee Whannell, because I know they mean well, but I feel like he's a little bit better when he's not working with Lee Whannell. I don't know, but you really liked the first Insidious.
Yeah.
And that was Lee Whannell, so.
So I want to throw out that better than Poltergeist thing.
All right, yeah.
All right, here's why I think it's better than Poltergeist, the first Insidious, not the second one.
Yeah.
Is because I think the first Poltergeist is a flabbier movie.
Okay.
And, like, it's almost like they watched Poltergeist and said, well, if we condense a lot of that Ghost Hunter stuff and squish it in a little bit.
Sure.
And I just think that this, and I want to see if you have any movies like this. All right, there's a lot of baggage that happened with the cast of Poltergeist.
By baggage, you mean death and murder.
A lot of death and murder.
Yeah.
That movie has a stigma to me where I never want to watch it because of all of the stuff around it.
Interesting, okay.
And I'm wondering if you have any movies like that.
I'm sure I do. I can't think of...
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of one. With me, you're a more human person than I am.
Thanks, RoboCop.
Because when I totally, but I'm more like a remake RoboCop.
You mean
with,
the good one.
With me, when I watch Poltergeist, I'm not thinking about all the death and murder that that eventually came about with the cast. I'm thinking about the whole, like, Toby Hooper, Steven Spielberg debate. Okay. Like, who actually made this movie? And for me, that carries a little bit of baggage.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think, like, Insidious is probably a scarier movie than the first Poltergeist. Mm-hmm. But I think the first Poltergeist does such a good job of setting up a believable family that I'm so invested in that stuff. I could almost do without any of the ghost stuff because I just like the movie about this family.
Yeah.
That I don't think Insidious and certainly not Chapter 2 ever do. I'll try and think of a movie that I can't watch because of the baggage. It's hard for me to watch Far and Away because I know that they eventually got divorced. So that's difficult for me.
That's rough. That's
if they can't make it work, who can? I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's like how I can't watch The Story of Us because I know that they're just going to fight the whole time.
Well, that's an impossible movie.
And the reason why I brought The Story of Us, why I had that on the brain, was I forgot to mention this during the when I was talking about the show thing. So I looked up on Rob Reiner, because that was like in his 80s run where just doing nothing but solid movie after solid movie. So you know how on IMDb they have known for, and they show like four posters of people's works when you bring up their IMDb page?
Okay.
So for Rob Reiner, I want you to guess what four movies he would have up
The
there.
Story of Us.
Yes.
Terrible, The Bucket List?
Nope.
Rumor has it.
Nope.
North.
No.
I'm deliberately sabotaging all of my choices.
Yeah. All right. Well, I would think
that... It's like Princess Bride, Spinal Tap, something, and The Story of Us, right?
Well, actually, I would think that it would be
Alex and Emma.
Like that. I would think it would be something like that, but what it was All in the Family.
Okay.
The Story of Us.
All right, of course.
This is Spinal Tap.
Yes.
Which is the only one that makes sense. Okay. And then the last one was Bullets Over Broadway, which apparently he was like the eighth lead in.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember him being in that movie, but it's been a while.
I don't either.
A Cusack movie you should see.
Okay.
If you haven't.
I have not.
Because then you get to knock out a good Woody Allen movie, too.
Story of Us just rented like crazy at Blockbuster.
Did it really?
They had a whole shelf of it, and like my joke was
No one saw it when it came out. I did, of course.
Story of the U.S. That was so funny.
That's one of those movies, because it's like no one went to see it, but when you're looking for a movie, it's like Bruce Willis, Michelle Pfeiffer, how can I not? The family would rent really well if there were still Blockbusters,
because
people would see Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer and rent it and possibly like it, which is what's wrong with America.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
In France.
That's it for us for Insidious Chapter 2. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks, Adam, for seeing the movie twice so you could do the podcast.
Thanks. You're welcome.
You are committed.
I can't wait for Scary Movie Month.
Yeah, only one more non-Scary Movie Month podcast before Scary Movie Month.
So are you in full Scary Movie Month mode, or are you still kind of like, it's still burnt out from last October?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely pretty geared up. I'm trying to pace myself a little bit and not watch only horror movies, mm-hmm. because I know that I've got...
It's going to be tough,
It's like Bastion with the sandwich in The Neverending Story, when he's takes one bite and he's like, no, still a long way to go. That's me. Well, so I'll watch some Friday the 13th, but I have a lot more sandwich to eat.
But you got to pepper stuff in because you got Gravity next month still.
Yeah, and it's I know. Not like you're going to have to see.
It's like, not like you're going to have be able to wait till November 1st to see Gravity.
No, I'm going to have to, although I'm not positive I can see Gravity. Every time I see the trailer, all I can think is, I'm going to have a panic attack in that movie.
That trailer got a cheer in the audience I was in because
Lake Zurich, Illinois.
Yeah, because Lex said she was from Lake Zurich, Illinois, and I wasn't even in Lake Zurich, Illinois.
But Lake Zurich, that shit plays.
Yeah, that's like in the preview for Hidalgo when he's like says something about he's like that stuff doesn't happen in Montana, and like people in Montana are probably just like pop pop.
Anyway, on the reference to the trailer for Hidalgo, we will bid you guys adieu until next week.
Ta-da!
I'm sorry, I stepped on it. Go ahead.
Ta-da! Sorry.